This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
The aftermath of every social revolution brings about change. Cultural norms and landmarks shift as our minds and hearts expand beyond the familiar. To everything, there is a season and a time to every purpose in the land of the living. This is our time to renew, revive, and restore the hope lost to the busyness of life. This is our time to dig again and rebuild from the storms of our past on a solid footing that holds. Welcome to The Foundation.
The Foundation.
The Foundation of Arts Grants is brought to you by Alive, Commonwealth Bank, Divinia Grove Foods, Mobile Garage Technologies, Popeyes, and the Water and Sewage Corporation.
The Foundation. The Foundation.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. 96.9 FM Radio, Howard Grant in your company. The Foundation on this absolutely gorgeous Wednesday. Listen, it is hot as fire. I mean, it is crazy outside. I'm hoping that your air condition is working. If not, you need to go down to your plug there. Right? Watch me. You need to go down to your plug there. Give me a call so we can talk about all the air conditions that you fix, because people need their AC fixed in their home. They need their ACs fixed in their cars. They need ACs fixed in their purses. Let's get this thing done, guys. Please give me a call, 827-0111, and make those things happen. It is a beautiful day, a hump day. And on hump day, you know, we normally try to do our best to be able to have a panel discussion. I made a commitment to you last week about the fact that we have two absolutely wonderful advocates who've been relentless in their approach on talk radio, on television, and other spaces to talk about national growth and development from a technological standpoint. How do we incorporate this technology? How do we incorporate particular things to get to a space of growth and development? Well, I got those guys today, ladies and gentlemen. You know who they are. You always hear them. You try to cuss them out and say, Jesus, why this one night? I want why the next one. But you know exactly who they are. And that's none other than C. Allen Johnson. He's on the Zoom call all the way from Grand Bahama. And we have in the studio with us Graham Weatherford. Y'all say good afternoon to the people, man. Go ahead, Graham.
Good afternoon, everybody.
Y'all here? You here? Present, Graham? Present.
Yes. Usually when I open, you know, I always talk too long. So I said I'll keep it short today, but I want to thank everybody for listening. You know, Howard, speaking about that air condition, that requires plenty electricity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we've been talking about that energy security and how you can run that AC for almost free during the day. Mm-hmm. We'll get there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know you want to be able to talk to us about the solar. I mean, you're going to be able to get that. See, Alan, say good afternoon to the people.
Yes, good afternoon to you, Howard. Good afternoon, Graham. And good afternoon to the Bahamas and the wider diaspora that's listening from wherever you are. Thank you so much for tuning in.
Yeah, man. Thank you so much for being able to tune in, all the people from Grand Bahama. Yeah, I appreciate these conversations. You know, I made commitments that there is, you know, because we have some wonderful guests that calls the show on a regular basis. And I really want to make the show about a community-based solution to be able to find real objectives and ideas to move forward. And that's one of the things that I want to do. I want to be able to say that and kind of move forward with that because it's important to me. It's important that the technocrats don't take on a position that they continue to be able to pontificate from their porcelain seat up high and be able to say down upon you peasants. It's important that we find the solutions here that's hands-on, because a great deal of the solutions that come to the forefront has so much red tape and it's just inefficient. We find so much money's pushed behind these particular things, but not necessarily find productivity. So I want to talk about that today. I want to take the time to talk about that, but I really want to weave in a conversation that has to do with national growth and development, looking at the decisions that are made to be able to get us to a better space, and we don't necessarily see that. In the papers today, I know, guys, make sure you pick up your papers. I want to touch this, but I guess we're going to touch it on Friday. If you guys give me space, I'd love to do that today. But in the Guardian newspaper today, make sure you pick it up. crime rising despite harsher sentencing, Monroe younger criminals becoming hitmen. If you read the article, it actually goes into the fact that over his 33 years career from 1990, he would have been in this kind of position to see the harsher punishments continue to increase. However, that has not been a deterrent. I want to take on a position to really talk about the fact that I believe that that has to do with the fact that we're not really dealing with people. We are not dealing with the intangibles. Most recently, and guys, please forgive me for starting a show like this, but I want to put this out there. Most recently, we've had, over the past 2 days, a conversation about what's been injected into our social decorum and conversation from the head of the BUT, Belinda Wilson, to talk about transgender education and the importance of being able to carve out a piece of the curriculum to ensure that we equipped our children who are moving to international spaces to understand that this is how the world works. Well, my position is that we don't have financial literacy. We don't have enough positions locally to be able to talk about black empowerment, the strength of a black man, to be able to move yourself out of the positions, to be able to find this entrepreneurial skills, right? We don't have enough of that being taught in our schools. And whilst we continue to be able to touch on these things and have social conversations about it, we're negating or neglecting the fact that we need to be able to deal with the intangibles. And this is why, in my view, in my opinion, why we would see harsher punishments and there's still this sort of irreverent approach to life. I want to talk about those things because I want to talk about these things with you all and really talk about where we are in our society. See, Alan, you have often talked about the orange economy and really talking about how those things can work. Tell us about the concept and idea of what you have. You've also talked about local government and being able to make modifications to local government with Lester Cox, who sat on the show some time back. But I want to talk about, what do you see the country now from a technological standpoint? How do we align ourselves to be able to find ourselves in a position of growth and development in this country? Talk to me.
Let me first answer the last question. I see our country on the precipice of being left behind. We are 23 years, or 22, depending on some people, into the 23rd century. And we are often been defined, no, still defined for the time being, as the most digitally prepared country in the world. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't want people to confuse preparedness with utilization. You know, you hear about people talk about 300,000 cell phones.
That's the difference between busy and productive. Yes. Because you could just be busy, but doing nothing.
Right. We are busy from a consumer aspect.
Yeah.
We haven't been the most prepared country in the world. We have yet to take even the first step beyond talk to digitizing the economy. Now, it's very important for us to understand that what the government often talk about, a digitization and digitalization, is not what I'm speaking of. They're talking about digitizing a company, a structure known as government, but there's digitalization of the economy that has to take place. So you hear us use the word digitization, digitalization, and digital transformation. Digitize or digitization is the converting to digital. Digitalization is the utilization of those digital assets. And digital transformation is more about a culture, a process, or a people that is immersive in the technology environment. And we have not moved towards that aspect. And when we talk about digitization of the economy, I've given up on digitization of the government. You know, we talk about all the billions we have spent over the last 30 years, and we can't get paperless documents. We can't get real-time, you know, consider, you know, YouTube and Vimeo and everything, these free platforms. We can't watch Parliament whenever we want to, however we want to, yet we have thousands of young people doing it every day in the Bahamas. I mean, I remember, you go back to my page, back to 2005, you could see copies of Parliament when I could have only posted 9 minutes at a time of the entire broadcast all day. And to date, we have still yet, almost 20 years later, I've not been able to have our institution do that.
Let me take this. Now, I won't touch this. Now, you all are the experts in studio with me, Graham. I want you to be able to follow me. I have some things that run around in my head as a young person. And looking at a contrast of what's happening in first world countries in the United States of America, what's happening in Europe, what's happening in other spaces, in Canada more specifically, we continue to be able to talk about these things. But I want to be able to talk about more specifically locally. Now, the last administration had made a significant commitment to be able to purchase the Town Center Mall space, to lease it out for the police. Now, for the life of me, watch me, just go with me, go with me. If I'm making sense, let me know, Howard, if you're making sense, this is why. For the life of me, I don't understand. Now, when my mother used to go to, she was a young person and she was excited to be able to do some stuff. She started to travel the United States of America. She was the head of American Eagle at the time, if you remember Seattle. She was doing some stuff in Grand Bahama. Then she would get her Lord and Taylor card. Watch me. She got Lord and Taylor card. She got JCPenney. She got Sears. These are the places that we go, and she had to pay these things. Now, whenever she got her bill, they would send it to her post office box, right? They would send it to these particular places. But now, me, 40 years later, 30 years later or so, displaced, we're getting emails, we're getting all these things up to date to have all these things. So for the life of me, I don't understand who really uses the post office. And this is, I'm asking myself this question. I said, who really uses the post office? Now, we always go to a courier to pick up something. And I'm saying, why didn't the government create a space to ensure that they could link everything, all the auxiliaries of government? If I need my passport, if I need anything done, it should be linked to me automatically being able to buy into one of the post office box. So they can hit me with a notification and say, Howard, your mail is here, your passport's ready, your driver's license is ready, so forth and so on, to make it efficient and effective in our society. But the fact of the matter is that I feel like it's a dormant waste in the middle of Nassau, in the middle of our country. Talk to me about it.
Well, at the back.
Let me just say, you need to have a show on the post office alone. Yeah. Because the post office is one of the first official port of entries into a country. The post office is not a building. It's a port of entry, just like the Prince George Dock and all of these port of entries that we have around the Bahamas. The post office plays an integral role in the WTO agreement that we talked about. And so the post office, as you know it, is just simply not a building to get mail. Now, you talked about digitization of the post office, digitization of using it. And you're correct that we can receive mail. You have people that are testing where you receive mail on behalf of people and actually digitize that mail and send it to them, notification for things. So when you talk about the post office being a port of entry, you're now talking about a huge multi-trillion dollar opportunity. Now, the Bahamas, we hear the behemoths talk about there's not a bank on every island. But what they don't realize is there is a bank on every island wherever there's a post office. The post office is a bank. It is a sanctioned bank by the Central Bank of the Bahamas. And we just don't use it because that has never been digitized. Because you, in fact, I think the post office bank still pays 5 or 6% interest on deposits where it's other 5%. Banks are charging you.
5%.
So here's the point in that. I'm just going to go to the WTO just for not 30 seconds. You hear United States and China and other people fighting about an advantage that China has as a developing country compared to United States, a developed country in goods. So let's use for commercial, so quick thing. You buy a Samsung in America and you have to mail it to the Bahamas or let's say mail it to Jamaica. Leaving the post office, the exchange, you know what you exchange between postal service, like how your bank exchanges? Mm-hmm. Let's say you have to pay a dollar to send that same phone. If you mail that phone from China, that exchange only costs you 10 cents. See the savings? Because of China definition in the International Postal Organization. The Bahamas has the same designation as a developing country, so that if we become, say, a transshipment point where you have the point of origin that you mail stuff from, if you mail from the Bahamas, you may pay 5 cents for that exchange. So you have an advantage of using this port of entry that we call the post office coming out of the Bahamas. And this is where we have this transshipment type environment where you can have countries do have something in the Bahamas, add something to it to make it the point of origin, you know, maybe a sticker on your cell phone or something.
But it's not being used like that. It even though this has to be able to use like that, our governments is using it as a shell. And even if this is, like you indicated, part of the agreement for the WTO to ensure that they have this and keep it buoyant, this is not socially productive at this point. Talk to me, Graham, about that.
Really, really quick. What did the U.S. government do with their post office?
What you mean when they made modifications to it? And they make it more efficient, I believe.
Not only that, they go up against the big...
all the big boys.
Couriers. We won't call their names, but you know the federal stuff you can get shipped really quick?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they said the U.S. Postal Service, which is building on what C. Allen is telling you, it is going to be more in the future, but I want to see we own it. But what happens is...
I feel
is
like they're leaving jobs on the table.
You have like careers and ownerships on and the jobs table in this country going to bed. To that. C. Allen told you this for years. I'd like to do shows on how to fix this country, starting in Freeport, because C. Allen keeps, and not where we call him with sound bites, where we get to talk about this is how you repair and move Freeport forward or Luther or whatever. But the post office in America, I can have somebody pick up an iPhone for me, take it to the post, and it will come right here. I can use registered mail. So that's just like that federal company that ships stuff, the Speedy Courier. Mm-hmm.
So it wouldn't cost you the arm and it. Now, this is wild.
Now, you go and ship all your things through those little couriers in the Bahamas.
This is wild of what you're doing right now, because it says to me, and I don't know why my mind continues to be able to throw flags as it relates to the potential of a conspiracy here. It says to me that there's something bigger going on. That if our governments have a very clear understanding that there is a very clear opportunity for the amount of things that are coming in on a day-to-day basis in this country, and for them to not put the significant emphasis or branding or marketing into what the post office can do and should do for the people of the Bahamas, it says that there may be affiliations with the couriers.
I don't want to get into that side of it, but you think about it. But really quick,
Seattle. Flag.
Howard, if I have to bring my stuff through a courier that charges me $1.25 a pound, and I could send office for 70 cents a pound or 10 cents, and if I could use, and C. Allen, you weigh in on this, if I could use Freeport as one of the biggest post offices in the hemisphere with transshipment, do you see where it's going?
Yeah.
Why are we not embracing our
things?
This is our post office and yours, right?
For me.
And you had that feeling, right?
For Howard Grant, I'm a light-skinned fellow, right? I just have to bathe with the black soap so I can ensure I keep this color. Talk to me. This is just do this, right? So the rosy color. Let's just be very clear. Howard Grant don't like to stand up in no sun for 2.5 hours when my birthday come for no driver's license. I'm going to talk about this.
It's crazy.
But Howard, let's talk about your driver's license. What happens is that technology has evolved right now that we should actually be issuing driver's license on your phone. And the police should be automatically connected, and your biometrics and everything could verify it if you're not there.
Simple.
When you go back to the post office, it's directly connected to what we have is we don't like to disrupt industries in the Bahamas. The post office and its
You're decent for saying that, C. Allen. That ain't what you mean.
No.
We don't like to disrupt industries in the Bahamas. I like that. That's politically correct.
Yeah.
What you said, you don't people mount, is what you mean. Talk to me.
Right. So you use an expression, right? My father once used this analogy. He says, if you want to hire 1,000 people and you need a septic tank to be dug, just give them all spoons.
Yeah.
If you want to hire 100, give them a pickaxe. And if you want to hire one, get a backhoe. And so the problem is the backhoe disrupts the
population. 999. The other 999.
Right. Yeah. So what happens
is that's small thinking. I have an issue with that. Because
it's lack of thinking. That's small thinking. Because the problem is that in every disrupted industry, new disciplines are created. And so the fact is that they are unaware of the new environment that replaces the old. They seek to maintain the old. So when you start talking about
it speeds up productivity. See, Alan, let me build. You're 100% correct.
Now, hold a second, Grant. Okay. Please, let me make my point.
Yeah.
Okay? Because it's not just speeding up productivity. I'm talking about the displacement of economic forces that happens. You're in disruption as the port services that we have for individuals that control these ports and harbors. Because if you was to use, say, Grand Bahama as a clearinghouse for the Postal Service as opposed to we sent our mail to Jamaica, I think, right now for clearing, then comes back here, is that you have now created a whole new aspect that no longer uses these pots that we have developed as controlled and owned by a small group of select individuals. And so we have to look at these, but also one of the things it disrupts is government revenue, because government depends on a cascading system of taxation and a consumption of carbon, which is like these cars and boats and everything. So efficiency in our economic systems decreases the taxation impact that government could expect to be put on people.
But see, Alan, the disruption for the cascading taxation should not stop your innovation. Innovation should place you in a position where both administrations, this administration, the former administration, the fact that we need to be more creative and innovative and being able to approach what we're doing in this country. I want to talk about this.
But Howard, ask me a question. Why aren't you asking your son to drive you to work?
My son?
Yeah.
He ain't ready for that kind of action yet.
What do you think? Now you're talking about your leadership.
It's not ready, but
No. Eventually, he will be dropping me to work. Let's just get that clear.
I'm saying today, we are talking about you replacing one thing for another. And so the most feasible thing of you is to say, tell him, drive to the corner stop sign and come back, and you tell him to walk to the stop sign and come back. He would have to choose walking because driving is out of his comprehension or reach.
I see what you're doing.
What is happening right now is that the world has shifted, and we have leadership, at least from the top, that is locked into 19th century concept
I won't talk
in
about
a
that.
21st century environment.
Just before you go there, see Alan, just before you go there, you said 1,000 people with a spoon, 100 people with a pickaxe, and one person with a backhoe. Okay, watch this, guys. If you were to do this, because the world's moving forward using a backhoe, not spoons or a pickaxe, right? As only one person in the backhoe does the job of 1,000 people with a spoon, what happens if a government with vision were to say, we're going to embrace the modern day technology and get 1,000 people with the backhoe? You see how much more productive you would be in a country and how much more revenue you would make, because you would be that more efficiency, more efficient.
Graham, the point you're missing is that if everybody's using backhoe, you have to have an environment where they have to...
That's what I want to talk about. Because
put into the use of backhoe in. So this is the displacement of the economy. And this is why... people have heard me talk about this digital economy and the Bahamas being the only place in the world today that has a unique feature of a data economy. Sorry, I use the word digital. It's a data economy. It's because this is where we are. And in fact, from November of this year, you actually saw a shift from a knowledge-based economy to an actual knowledge economy with the introduction of artificial intelligence, machine learning, and deep learning. We're still...
Let me take this commercial break. See, Alan, hold up. Put a pin right there, because I want to talk about that. I want to talk about it and put it in practical terms, that people are still seeing what my grandmother used to call street sweepers. I want to put it in practical terms. These are the proverbial 1,000 men with spoons. I want to have a very clear conversation about that and contrast that to what we're seeing in the Blueprint for Change, which Wayne Monroe spoke about last evening, and his commitment and his government's commitment to stay abreast with that and move forward. Let's take a very quick commercial break, ladies and gentlemen. 96.9 FM Radio, Howard Grant and your company, the foundation. I got the greatest guys in the world in the studio. Let's take this break and be right back after this.
The foundation.
The Foundation. We'll be back right after this.
The Foundation. The Foundation.
On your part.
Karifta is almost here, and Alive has partnered with TCL for you to capture gold at the 2023 Karifta Games. Switch to Alive and get a free 4 TCL 30SE on select Alive postpaid plans to share pictures and videos of our Bahamian athletes as they hit the tracks to win gold. Visit your nearest Alive store or mobile van location and come gold with us at the 2023 Karifta Games.
Fidelity, we're good for you.
my business couldn't survive without my credit card machine from Fidelity.
It's fast, convenient, and my clients love it.
My sales increase, and I can track my earnings.
Get your credit card machine from Fidelity today.
Call 356-7764.
Get cash back from the Water and Sewage Corporation. Receive $10 off your bill when you complete our online survey.
We want to hear from you. Help us serve you better.
Visit www.wsc.com.bs to complete our survey and receive $10 off your next bill.
Cashback offer applies to the first 100 customers.
Easy and rewarding.
The Water and Sewage Corporation. Committed to growth, committed to quality.
The foundation. And we are back, ladies and gentlemen, 96.9 FM radio, Howard Grant, the foundation, right here on this beautiful Wednesday in studio with me. I got Graham on the Zoom all the way from Grand Bahama. We got Sea Island Johnson, both having a conversation with me and really talking about some things that you may consider taboo, but that's okay. It might be tight, but it's going to be all right. Don't fight me. It's going to be tight, but it's going to be all right. You may be indifferent about these things. You may know some persons in these industries. This is not to vilify the industry, those individuals, but we're talking about forward. It's very clear. In the year of our jubilee, as we continue to be able to speed towards, to jet towards July 10th, when we identify 50th year, our 50th year jubilee here in this country, our golden jubilee, we have yet to see the kind of progression and productivity that we envisioned 25 years ago. Talk to me. Let's be very clear about this.
Howard, really quick. 25 years. I think I'm more patriotic than most people. But really, 25 years. What are we celebrating? Did we build one hospital? I mean, we built plenty billion-dollar hotels. But did we build one hospital? And if the health of a nation is the wealth of a nation, we don't really care about our people's health.
The PRP most recently we just saw something with Dr. Darvall indicating that they're going to break ground in a hospital in a month or so. So we're going to be able to see those things in Grand Bahama, who's been desperately, listen to me, the language in Grand Bahama, see, Alan, let's talk about this. The language in Grand Bahama as it relates to healthcare is abysmal. The language that says, hold on, wait, you sick? Don't go. These are the kind of conversations that we have locally. If you sick, don't go to PMH. Why? Why?
But if you say you're going to do it, right, and you've had 50 and you haven't done it. See, if you look at what someone did for the last 10 years, they're going to continue that for the next 10.
That's crazy. And you know what?
When you talk about the hospital and economic development, it's very important when we begin to look at more so for Grand Bahama and a lack of an ecosystem. And they're right. And, you know, what they say is that you're in Grand Bahama, they'll tell you if you're sick, you have a better chance at the morgue than you do at the hospital, because that's where you'll most likely end up anyway. Mm-hmm. And what happens, though, is that you've had these people talking about hospitals. We've been patching the Princess Margaret Hospital for, 100 years, wherever it's been built. We need a hospital that actually has the ability to handle for 400,000 individuals and the growth that is necessary. In the same capacity, when we talk about the RAND, we renamed it a hospital. The proper name is RAND Clinic. It became RAND Memorial Clinic or RAND Hospital, but it's still the same clinic that was built 50, 60 years ago, except for some additional buildings that was added onto it. It was built by a clinic by, I think, Dr. RAND or his family, and then essentially, so this is still a clinic that we keep adding rooms, and you go walk across the street over here for this and that. What we need for Grand Bahama, considering even our size and capacity and the potential, is a hospital, not even the hospital that Dr. Darvall is now pronouncing and announcing that he will build. We need a purpose-built hospital that is part of a marketed ecosystem to accommodate the technology, the industry, and whatever
these are. Let me ask you this question, C. Allen. As a pronounced technocrat who has significant years under his belt and you continue to tell us about the inception even of the internet in our country and your affiliation thereof. As a pronounced technocrat who is always coming on the radio and being able to give us a blow-by-blow, almost the meat of what needs to happen on a day-to-day basis, do you believe that our leaders, who all know you, every all sides, they know you, both you and Graham, they know you, right? Do you believe that they hear you, right, and can't necessarily absorb what you're saying because of the significant information that's in it? Do you believe that in this particular instance, that dumbing down would cause them to be able to gravitate towards it or make the necessary changes to see the kind of growth that we need in our society? Because they need to hear this, but they may not necessarily understand the details of what you speak of. Talk to me about it.
Two-part answer. The first part is, remember when you went to Cuba and you landed there and you didn't speak the native language?
Yeah.
What happens if the time you spent, how much years you spent, a year, 2 years?
No, there? I actually spent 1 year there and I learned Spanish in 3 weeks.
Wow. Okay, what if I had only given you 1 week?
No, I wasn't. Let me tell you what happened. Now, my wife listens.
No, I didn't want you to answer you. What would have happened instead of you having the 3 weeks, what would have happened if 1 week later I say you got to go?
No. I would not have had what I've had, what I have now. Let me tell you what happened.
Okay, good.
Let me tell you what happened first. Hold on. This is a quick story. In Cuba, I was unable to communicate with these beautiful women. Let's just be very clear about this. I didn't have my girlfriend yet. Talk to me. In decency, I put this out there. My desire to be able to communicate with my desire, talk to me. Okay. I had to learn Spanish quickly. And so every morning, 6 o'clock in the morning, I was downtown. I didn't know. I write it down in my hand. I was practicing my in 3 weeks. I was the translator for my grouping, and that's just what it is.
Beautiful, you know something. Exactly. Beautiful analogy. You know, Howard, you had a desire, and you had a limited time. So it's the same thing with the 5 year celebrities. They have no desire of knowing. They know they're only going to be there for 5 years.
They're content. They get paid.
And, right.
To and meet.
So, the problem is, you have a 5 year celebrity that's injected into a system that's going to take 10, 15, or 20 years to achieve. They're not looking for legacy, they're looking to be reelected. And so the problem is, we have not had leadership of the likes of the 1973 or 1967 to 1980, 80-ish change about what happened after it became independence. And so here we are, where you could almost say the first digital revolution happened in earnest in 1992. Notice that date, 1992, that's when the change of leadership in the countries happened.
Yes, that's the sunshine government.
Right, but at the same time, the world changed into the first digital revolution. We're now into the second digital revolution.
Yes.
So what happens now is that we never, in spite of our preparedness, maybe they were unaware, we never changed any of our modus of operation during that time. In fact, we went back regressively in doing the property land act so that we could begin to trade assets for jobs. And so where people like Singapore and other places we emulate was actually moving into a form of nationalism, because they understand that technology was democratizing the global economy.
Here we are 30 years later. I won't touch that because as we look at the landscape of our country, and Graham, I'd like you to be able to touch this for me, right? Just be able to put this. As we look at the landscape of our country, A.C. Allen, going all the way back to 1992 and identifying this kind of an idea for government and the sunshine, transparency, and the very first thing, simultaneously, you see something progressive and then regressive simultaneously. Mm-hmm. When they open up the radio stations for us to be able to have this sort of a liberal conversation, mm-hmm. and simultaneously gave us the repeal as it relates to the Property Act, right? Right, that position would they take with that, right? So let's just talk about this kind of duality that happened in this space. I want to talk about that and talk very clearly to me about whether or not politics in its traditional state needs to be maintained for those men and women that continue to be able to climb the ladder to this position. Does that have to do with national growth and development, or is just to be able to perpetuate the oligarchs? Talk to me, Grant.
Well, it's really, really simple. I'm going to be short throughout the day. If I'm going to do something that will oppress you, right? The Property Act, right? Then I need to give you a distraction. Go run your mouth on radio. You'll feel you're achieving something, but really, what decision to oppress you? What you should be doing is going on the radio and starting a movement of 30 or 50,000 people that say, we will vote next election. And we'll vote a certain way based on how you make us wealthy and a part of this country and where we have the ownership, not the foreigner, whether he comes from the Caribbean or Canada. Mm-hmm. But we don't network. Mm-hmm. Martin Luther King had to network, eh?
Yes, he
to
did.
Achieve something.
Yes, he did.
When will we network?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Cialan.
The problem is that with radio was a good and a bad thing. The bad thing with radio is it opened the doorways to what is called blowhards. And blowhards are those individuals that have so much to say but so little substance in it. They simply have what they say, I think, I believe, I heard, I was told, I wish, and why not? Mm-hmm. Could be not, and no one knows exactly how to. And so the problem with that is that what it did, it caused an expansion of this illusion of knowledge of people having knowledge of how to. And so what has happened is over the years, I remember, though, if you could get into the radio station, it was like once a week. In fact, a lot of radio hosts start getting private numbers for individuals such as myself to say, don't call the regular lines. Like, you have the Guardian regular lines. There was a hidden number to say, Cialan, whenever you need to call this number because we need to hear from you. And so, but then many of those people died. In fact, I think your grandfather was one of those individuals, Howard, right here in Grand Bahama, that was, he was a treasure trove. I thought that we wasted the opportunity.
That's my uncle's father. That is an old soldier. He always used to call Darryl.
Yeah, old soldier.
Yeah, yes. The Cecil Hepburn. Yeah.
Yes, he died with so much information, so much of our history that was lost in his death because we don't document it. Mind you, Perry Glasson Christie with the University of Bahamas started an institute supposedly to capture these things. I remember calling them when they said they started this institute at the University of Bahamas. College of Bahamas at the time. I don't remember where it was, but it says University of Bahamas. And they said they was going to start documenting these individuals. So I call and says, hey, what and everything, can I help? And they says, no, we can't write everything. I'm not kidding you, Howard.
Yeah.
They were going to listen to these people talk about the history.
And write it down.
And write it down.
That's bananas.
And I said,
I don't have time for that.
Right. Still write down your statement in your report, you know, when you file a report.
I said, we could just put a tape recorder or camera in front of them. In fact, we can leave it running for 24 hours and just let them talk until they fall asleep. And they says, no, we're going to be taking our notes or whatever. I'm just showing you where we have these intent, but we seemingly lack the ability. And so the problem is that we spend $70 million a month almost on these technocrats. But what happens is they are locked into a system that doesn't allow full expression of what we get value for what we pay for. But when you look at, again, at the civil service, Howard, a survey was done right before around 2018 by an international organization that showed that we had between the government and government agencies and all of these different things, between 30 and 40,000 individuals. That's P&P, temporary, I forget all the definition, track workers and all these different things. It said that we technically needed 7,500 people to do the job of 30,000 that we currently were paying 30,000, which goes back to the shovel and spoon and information. But because we have not stopped and paused, and I've heard people talk about the National Development Plan, and I say to you, Howard, right on the same radio station, when that first was released, Gregory Moss was heading a political party at that time. I was the chairman. We challenged the National Development Plan, and within 24 hours, it was withdrawn, and they went to address some of the deficiencies we have, but they brought it back essentially the same. And one of the major challenges of that plan was we said, this was a book of ideas, not something that actually could integrate in a real-time environment of our current economy and future economies. And so, yes, all of these things are possible, but there's no strategy exactly how, no plan of going forward. And that's what a national development plan is. And so we have never depoliticized a national development plan. We say, oh, we invited the FNMs to sit in this DNA to sit. You know, when you invite for consultation, you don't ask me for giving, you're actually doing the national development plan, and you got an hour to tell us what you think you should be.
That's what they tell you. Let me take a commercial break and get to news and get back. But, Graham, I want to talk to you, both of you, about this, man. I think we're having a very good conversation. I got some texts coming in. Ladies and gentlemen, if you want to be a part of the conversation, please give me a call, 323-6232-325-4316, 325-4259. Or hit me up on the text, 422-4796. Let me read a quick text before we get out of here. It says, good show as usual. Your guest smarter than my dumb self. I waited until I was 40 to get property. I was too busy buying luxury cars and going to Miami. Boy, I tell you, it's a true story. These are conversations that we need to have. How do we get our kids prepared? Is it through the transgender education? Or do we really empower them with conversations about financial understanding?
Teach money and chess in school so they know strategy and money.
They ain't teaching that.
No.
They teach you how to throw dice. But we can be, let's be very clear about this. 96.9 FM radio, guys. We're going to take a commercial, get to news, and be right back after this.
The foundation. The foundation.
Foundation.
The Foundation. We'll be back right after this.
The Foundation. The Foundation. The Foundation. The Foundation.
Tired of banks forcing you to use technology to bank the way they want you to? Your convenience is important. So no matter what your banking needs, Commonwealth Bank's friendly staff are always available in branch for that personal one-on-one service. But when you choose technology, our online and mobile banking app offers you state-of-the-art functionality. The choice is yours. Commonwealth Bank. Bank the way you want.
Divania's Grilled Food and Products are now open in the Kenneth Plaza, Prince Charles Drive. Come, you must try the jerk chicken, jerk pork, and all their amazing grilled food. Grilled daily to perfection using all their amazing sauces made right here in the Bahamas. Divania's, grilling good food for life. Call or WhatsApp Divania's today at 817-4468.
The Grand Bahama News is available every Tuesday in the Nassau Guardian. Buy your local paper at Freeport convenience stores, Western Bakery. Want to reach your Grand Bahama customers? Then call Barefoot Marketing at 827-4578 or message them for ad rates via their Facebook page. Advertising opportunities now include classified ads too. Keep up with all the latest Grand Bahama News in the Nassau Guardian newspaper every Tuesday.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Guardian Radio and the Foundation are on the move.
Bahamas, this one's for you.
SBT. Small Business Thursdays. Every Thursday, the Foundation with Howard Grant will highlight small businesses throughout the country, far and wide. Your products, services, prices, and personality. We want to hear it all. Get your 30 or 60 second advertisement heard on air at a fraction of the cost. We here at the Foundation understand the times and don't want you to be left behind. With Guardian Radio, you reach your specific demographic, and it is unmatched.
We reach thousands daily.
Get your promises in their hearts. Small Business Thursdays with The Foundation, only on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. For more information, call 302-2300 or the Help Me Howard line at 827-0111. SBT. Small Business Thursdays. Get your business moving today.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Foundation. The Foundation. The Foundation. Foundation. The Foundation.
And we are back, ladies and gentlemen, 96.9 FM Radio, Howard Grant in your company. The Foundation on this absolutely wonderful Wednesday, we've been able to chop down some things and really get into it. And I'm really grateful for the opportunity to kind of have this conversation with you in studio with me today is Graham Weatherford and all none other than C. Allen Johnson. Before we get into anything, I want to thank Mobile Garages for being able to support the show. Let me read a little something here. It says, looking to improve your fleet operation? Manage your fleet of vehicles online with 100% Bahamian-owned fleet management software backed by Bridgestone Americas. Track fuel, location, fleet, expenses, and so much more, all online. Schedule a free demo today. Give us a call at 422-4575. That's 422-4575. Or visit us at Mobile Garage Fleets today. That's Mobile Garage Fleets today. It's time for us to be able to do some stuff, ladies and gentlemen. I thank you so kindly for being able to do that. Now, if you're just tuning into the show, if you're just kind of getting into it and really getting into the rhythm of what we're talking about today, maybe you got, you know, your sandwich in your hand, whatever you're having for lunch. Maybe you went down to the Vanjas and get something. You did something well, right? So you get into the conversation. How are what y'all talking about? We're talking about national growth and development and the incorporation of technology, right? I use one of C. Allen's words, pseudo, right? It's really superficial. And it doesn't have that kind of an effort, that application that we can see true growth from. It's the difference between busy and productive. We as a nation, as a people, post 73, found ourselves extremely busy, relentlessly busy, but not necessarily as productive as we need to be. The production that we've seen in this nation, and you know, I got these technocrats in the studio, but I got to lay it on the table. The production that we've seen in the nation has been rendered to a few men post 82, and that has been through cocaine. Talk to me. Let's be very clear about the thing, right? Being progressive, the closest we've came to that and being able to identify a true sense of productivity when we held our breath was in 1992 with the idea of the Sunshine Government, right? So the Free National Movement came in 1997. They said, well, let me give you a chance. I didn't finish doing what I had to do. By 2002, that was done. The PRP came in, and then we were revived, we were reformed, we were ready to go. And in 2007, that was done again. We find ourselves on this relentless hamster wheel, trying to be able to move forward as a nation, and we're at this same spot, busy and non-productive. Is it time to be able to get rid of our leaders? Is it a mindset, or is it perpetuating an idea to stuff in the pockets of the new colonialists, the neo-colonialists who are in this position to stuff their pockets and take care of their families? Is it our time to identify our anger or displeasure towards those men and women who sit at the mount? Which mount this is? Sinai, because that's where the tablets come down from. They sit at Mount Sinai and render tablets and say, go ye this direction, and we are not productive as a nation. I want to put that on the table. I don't want to talk about these things. We looked at some subsectors. Graham and I, on the break, were having conversations about what baffles me, because I mentioned Samaritan's Purse to be able to find a true sense of productivity. I just, for the life of me, I couldn't understand why did you get a floating hospital to put right in. I just couldn't understand it. Why didn't you outfit in a hospital, even just being able to identify no boats was moving in the world. Mm-hmm. I couldn't understand this. Why are our leaders so backward? See, I didn't touch it.
No, let me say, okay, I want to come back to the hospital. But that monologue you did was powerful. Mm-hmm. Let's go back to that analogy. When the Israelites left Egypt, it was said that he says, this generation would not see the promised land. Yet 40 years later, when they entered the promised land, people in their 60s, 70s, and 80s, and whatever, entered the promised land with them. So then one must extrapolate from that. He wasn't talking about a generation of age. What God was speaking to was a generation of a mindset. These people.
See, Alan, I didn't know you was get deep with me. Be swimming today. Watch me. Watch me. So the Bible speaks, hold on, see, Alan, let me touch it. The Bible speaks that be ye transformed in your thinking. And our transformation, whilst we continue, that's why you separate the conversation between religious and spirituality. Religious, right? The religiosity of it says that we are here, we have accepted. But the relationship is the transformation and application thereof. See, Alan, touch the thing.
Absolutely. So essentially, it was this generation who had forgotten who their connection to was. And so what he said was, we must purge this mindset before you enter the promised land, because you must reestablish with your source to build this new future you're going into. And so if you look through the Bible, you see each time there was a disconnect, there was a disbandment. And so essentially,
there's a cycle, now, you know. There's a cycle to that. Let me tell you the cycle. Right. The cycle goes from sin to slavery to supplication, which you have to pray, and then to salvation and back to a period of silence. That runs through the entire book of Judges. Man, I just get preachy. I have to call
them out. But I'm saying, so here we are. And so we have this generation of leaders that doesn't know and will not make it into the promised land. This generation of thought, they brought with them the mindset of the Pharaoh of control and management of the people. And we're simply saying the mindset that we got from 67 to 1973 cannot enter into the promised land of the Bohemian new economy. And so what you have is a leadership that still sits on the top, that has allegiance to processes, policies, and procedures, even legislation, that is tied to the very methodology of oppression that we said we were freeing ourselves from. So for us to get out of this promise, out of this walking around for 50 years without anywhere to go, it requires a new leader, a new mindset. It wasn't Joshua the person. It was a new mindset of leadership, promised land. We are that cups right now on our 50th anniversary. And the question is, you made a statement, rolling dice. Are we going to make clear, concise decision in the next poll, or are we going to simply roll the dice again and hope we get snake eye or something?
Let me let Graham touch it. Go ahead, Graham.
Well, the way I see it is we don't vote for people. We vote out people, and that's really sad, because by keeping the people with that system, right, and not allowing for them to ask the important questions on the issue, like what part of banking, tourism, conceptual economy, digital economy that C. Allen all talks about, what part will I own? And tell me how specifically. See, if you ask that to anyone running, you have some issues. But Howard, listen to this. This is how I see it. You said they kept us busy. You remember that, Howard?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they kept us busy with cheap labor. Mm-hmm. They kept us distracted with politics. You red, I yellow, mm-hmm. we fight instead of looking mm-hmm. at who's really benefiting from the country and all it has to offer. I won't get into those resources and stuff. And they also kept us busy while keeping us from ownership. Mm-hmm. We never talk about what we will own. We talk about you'll get to work in tourism.
I don't know whether or not we had any aspirations for ownership. I think the general conversation was about empowerment outside of
Watch me.
See, Alan, go with me. I think that the conversation that was infused into the minds and hearts of the Bahamian people when the Union Jack fell and the Bahamian flag rose was now an opportunity that we could go to the Savoy Plaza. Now an opportunity that we could be able to work as tech, be able to travail over on West Bay Street in these particular areas, as opposed to being able to be viewed only as the over the hill. But it was never really about entrepreneurialism.
Or owning that bank. Or owning that Savoy.
It was never about ownership.
No.
It was about inclusion.
Yeah.
Howard, it was absolutely necessary. You know what happens, right? You ask and ask, why do these millionaires and billionaires have their children work in the store? Because if you don't know how the mechanism of the store works, mm-hmm. of the economy works, then how could you govern over it? So the problem is that we never left that process of understanding the inner working of these institutions, and we had leadership that didn't believe that you were ever prepared to own and run the places. Mm-hmm. And Graham made a statement is that, oh, we just have people vote against. We have never had leadership that came and appealed to the public to give them something to vote for.
Never.
No.
Not one time ever in this country.
Because they'll vote against. Watch so you me. Don't need to educate.
No, Graham, I believe.
I won't touch a history with this.
Right. See, I'm saying to you, you can take whatever you want. We have spent billions of dollars educating Bahamians. In fact, 75% of the intelligentsia that leaves the Bahamas never come back. Hold on a second. They have not left the Bahamas. They are simply parked, waiting for the train or vehicle to begin moving so they could get on board. And so I don't consider them lost. I consider them waiting.
They're in transit.
Right. And so so what I'm saying now is we are now, believe it or not, regardless of what anybody said about the Bahamas Bahamian experience, mm-hmm. we are now exactly where we need to be. Mm-hmm. The question now is, what do we do? Do we begin movement towards where we should be and where we could be? Or do we simply sit on the nail and complain about the pain? Or do we get up? And so it says power concedes nothing without a demand. My frat brother, Frederick Doug, does not concede to the demand coming from an emasculated constituent. You cannot demand anything from me on your knees. And so I'm simply saying is that we are now approaching where literally 60 to 70% of the population in the Bahamas was born post-1981, mm-hmm. which is what we call the millennials from 1981 to 1995, mm-hmm. the Gen Z from 1996 to 2010. They now need to be given the opportunity to be engaged and have a conversation about the Bahamas they want to see. The oldest one is 42.
Mm-hmm. Now that's my age. That's my age. Right. Watch me. Right. You're getting heavy because you're talking truth.
So I'm simply saying is that they need to be rallied to make a demand.
No, man. See, Alan, I'm going to use the words of the minister responsible, the minister out of the office of the prime minister responsible for NIB, I'm going to use some of his words and I can surmise it. Well, what do you want to do if the people aren't dying? They're living longer. You remember when he started to talk about the fact that we have to pay this 40-some million dollars, so forth and so on? He said, what do you want us to do? Because people are living long. Let's be very clear. I don't have to see you die for me to be able to get forward. As we continue to talk about the foundation of this country, we start to talk about men. George Smith, who sat with me a few months back, George Smith was the youngest man who went up to the independence, the conglomerate that went up to be able to talk about our constitution and independence, right? Mm-hmm. He was the youngest person, right? When you look at the array of those men and their ages, man, this was the youth. This was the proverbial millennial during that particular season that transformed the entire country.
But Howard, look at those people and any one of those names, A.D. Hanna, all of their names, what's the dentist's name?
I think Edward Donaldson was there also.
Edward Donaldson was there, the other guy's a dentist. All of them, look at every single one of those members of his cabinet, any one of them could have been prime minister. And so, in fact, when somebody runs, and I know our constitution protects the position of prime minister's leader of the party.
That's how I know. Watch me. That's how I know that this constitution, man, is a different conversation.
No, but
that's I know that constitution was given to us and not created by us. Because if it was created by us, all those men who had sense, listen, Lord, Lyndon Pinley can't be prime minister forever. Let's make modifications here.
Ah, but see, but here's what happens. How do you have a person who gets up and say they run for one to office and say, I have no ambition or ability to be prime minister? When, let's say, for instance, God forbid that Brave Davis goes to sleep tonight and doesn't wake up. There is no such thing as a deputy prime minister. And there is no such thing as ascension in any guarantee in any political party. You have a choice of choosing any of those individuals that sit in parliament. It's the one who commands the most respect on the immediate. Remember, the convention isn't held immediately in the party for him to be the party leader or whatever you want to use. So it's the one who commands the most respect. We should be choosing leaders who we can see prime minister material in, the ability
The full stop should have come. We should be choosing leaders, full stop. Because we have not been given a choice.
No, we got party loyalists.
We haven't. Talk to me, Graham. Let's be very clear about this. We haven't been given a choice. Every single one of those persons go through the constitution of their organization or through the body of their organization. And they're chosen and identified in their organization and sent to a constituency. We ain't never choose the... I don't know the smart.
What is an MCM and what is a Stalwart Council?
Meritorious Council members on the Free National Movement and Stalwart Councils. These are...
So those are the people that
select
the leader.
Yes.
Alan, correct me if I'm wrong. Do you get to vote as a citizen on who will be the leader of the party?
No, you don't. But Graham,
that's what I want you to realize.
No, Graham, we need not to conflate the party structure because, in fact, if the PLP was to follow their constitution, all stalwarts would be voted.
If there was.
I don't get to choose.
Right. It says that on the occasion, whenever there's 12 or more stalwarts in any constituency, they should find themselves in the constituency because each constituency has 11 votes. So when there's 12 or more, you choose the 11 who's going to represent you. But that's the discussion of what the PLP was and what it should be referring to. So again, with the MCMs, so I think you have to be familiarized with how each of these parties is actually run to understand the breakdown or contamination. A choice, no matter what, Graham, is in the people of the Bahamas because you can choose none of the above if given the choice of one.
But is none of the above really a choice?
But maybe I like the party, but I don't like the leader. I never get to vote for the leader. Just
Graham, when I go
into when you finish, I'll talk.
Right. In my Jewish faith, they ask me, do you want bacon or sausage? And I always say to them, neither. Because that is not a choice. That I don't eat the pork. So what's the difference? And so you can't. And so you have the ability to say no to them. And if you come together.
But the constituency.
The constituency can come together.
In the vein of your analogy.
By the country. The constituency can come together and choose who is best able to represent them.
But in the vein of your analogy, let's watch. Again, with your analogy, you're going to the BK, you're going to get your situation. All right, now. In the vein of your analogy, you rejected both the pork and the bacon. That's fine. Okay, the pork. Okay, good. Mm-hmm. And the sausage. Now, let's be very clear. The constituency has not been afforded an opportunity to be able to have an egg or the bread, or the cheese. There's nothing available in the constituency. If you're saying to me, now we have to create this, then someone need to learn how to bake quickly. Someone need to be able to grow some chicken quickly. And we don't have that in these particular constituencies. That's why I yield to one or two of the men or women that are sent in these constituencies because they have the mechanism and the machine of the organization behind them that could propel them to exactly where we are. And where are we? Busy and not productive.
And the independent is the young baker, though, Howard. The independent's a young baker, but he ain't really baking.
He ain't never baked nothing yet.
Right, so you don't want to trust that food.
No, but see, that's the problem, Howard. What you have is a control of media. And I said we are consumers, not actual utilizers. And so what you have is a small group of people with blowhorns that is drowning out the noise of the new generation of leaders. But as we have now progressed, you will begin to see that more and more younger people are becoming disassociated. And I put to you that COVID was not the only thing that caused people to disconnect from the last political campaign. And we have to be very careful in the Bahamas that if we continue on the route we're going, we could have a very small minority choosing who will govern the majority. Yep. And so we have a unique opportunity in this transition point to actually begin to have a conversation on national development. We're talking about this today. So here it is that we're talking about foreign investments when we should be talking now about the tokenization of the economy. This is where the world is going to. We talk about FTX and everything else. So we talk about one person coming in here that basically did not use tokenization, did not use cryptocurrency. And I'll put you, when this trial begins, you will see that his fraud had nothing to do with digital assets. Mm-hmm. Okay? Mm-hmm. But you must understand digital assets, because I can't come to you with sand glass and tell you it's sand dollars, right? The digital currency. And then you accept that it all it did. Because if you don't know sand glass and you don't know sand dollar, then you could actually confuse the two. And that is what we allow to happen. So I'm saying to you, but the world is moving to the new era of financial technology, which comes us back now. Digitization and tokenization of our economy and utilization. Howard, let me sidebar. I want your Guardian media to listen to this, your reporters. The value of Ministry of Tourism data has the ability to add $2 billion to our GDP every single year for the next 30 years.
I agree with you. Now, I don't know about the financial figure, but I know that they're leaving a tremendous amount of money on the table because data is the new gold.
I said add, meaning that once you add it, it doesn't go away. Mm-hmm. So it means not input into the economy. I'm saying permanently add to the economy. The data in tourism is more valuable than our seagrass and our mangroves combined today. Okay? So what happens though, it'll actually tokenization of our economy will actually allow fractional ownership among all citizens, meaning that every time the boat rises, the water rises, all boats rises. But see, what happens is, here it is that you have no one that understands digitization, not less tokenization, other than that our financial service and our banking system would already shift. We're still fighting about using digital cards and payment system that has been used around the world for 40 years. Yeah. Okay? We are still fighting about the infrastructure that is necessary for these things to even function as a transparent aspect like greeting.
Yeah.
And so we've heard about, oh, the Blueprint for Change, a book of ideas that they rapidly try to implement from development. And I'm saying to you is that we don't even have a place.
You talk so quick. You say profound things and brush over them, CLN. Say that again. A shanty town.
Of ideas, economy, a shanty town economy.
Yes.
And so what happens is we don't have places like the University of Bahamas and other universities, as open space for individuals to express ideas, whether real or imagined, and to have them critique and be part. You know what you say? It's important. It's impossible to put some seasoning or salt in the pot without changing the composition. And so we don't have these spaces. What we have is a small group of people with a blowhorn, and you have a small intellectually defunct people that is given preferential space in our media houses to repeat the same ideas. We go back to the same people and says, you was in the House of Assembly 20 years ago and you did nothing, and we've consulted you for the last 20 years. So what do you think now of this new idea that you haven't been able to grasp? And then we put it on the front page. It is madness that we are going around on this treadmill. We are the greatest shift in the world today. Mm-hmm. This concept of the various economy, we are in the first convergence revolution, the second digital revolution, the third technology revolution, the fourth industrial revolution, and the fifth social revolution, all happening at the same time. Never in history did more than two of these happen at the same time. We got five happening.
That's exciting.
Here what I'm saying to you is, you got to go to Gates' notes and listen to what he wrote last week. That in his entire history in the technology industry, and how you talk about Smith being that young person. When I happened to be at IBM and other different people, I was the baby in the room, a teenager, right? Everybody was in their 30s, dead or dying or retired. I just happened to be a youngster in the room. So that gives me just a different insight of being able to witness these things by privilege that allowed me. So this is why I know about what is and what will become. So I'm simply saying is that there is young people now that is actually taking these tools right in the Bahamas and building it, but they have no means of expression, no access to capital, no access to the means of being able to have it, whether it be startup environment and ecosystem, an accelerated ecosystem, or innovation centers, and any of these different things. So they're literally dying full on our streets and everything else. And so we just have to, and I put this upon you being the top of the food chain in this new generational shift, that individuals like you have to come to the forefront. Coming to the forefront is not necessary politics in the political arena.
Because I held my breath just now because I will hear that.
It's actually taking a leadership role, having the experience of management of ideas and processes harvest and harness this reservoir of knowledge. I said to you that we were moving from the knowledge-based economy to an actual knowledge economy. And the knowledge economy is actually the pure-based system that creates on acquiring knowledge, information, utilization, and the production and distribution of goods and services that is relying on the application of knowledge.
I love how you now we got to talk about this again, because I think this is going to have to be a part two, but I want Graham to touch these things because I know that he's been writing for a long time. I want to see exactly where his mind is, because the duality of this conversation and this information that's coming forward, people are really excited about that. Before I take a break, Graham, I want you to just touch it for 2 seconds, this man, because this is some significant information. Go ahead, Graham.
Well, you know, Howard, really quick. I call you the senior millennial. So I've broken it down into baby millennial, middle, and senior millennials. You are. So, and unfortunately, we didn't embrace you and put you where you should be. But I look at things like El Salvador. It's a tiny country. And they said, we're going to accept U.S. dollars and Bitcoin. Now, Bitcoin took a dip and everybody said, hey, the guy was an idiot. Now Bitcoin's back up. Whether he's an idiot or not, he's found a successful way to get money from the U.S. to his people without huge fees and taxes and in a timely format. And we discussed that right on this show with C. Allen, Wayne Johnson, Lester Cox in 2016, 7 years ago, when we said, let's do a sand dollar, no, a conch coin, and back it by our natural resources, not U.S. dollars in a bank that fluctuate. And it would have had intrinsic value out of the gate. And, you know, it's really sad that for 7 years we haven't moved the currency where it should have been in this country. But
seven
it's happening.
Years is a short time, Graham.
It's long.
For your break, right, Graham? But I'm saying this. I want to talk about that, right? But I think when we conflate Bitcoin, which to me is the greater fool theory, I've argued against this whole concept of the conch coin, came up in 2018, actually at the tech forum here on Grand Bahama. But when we were talking back in 2016 and other arenas, we were talking about, you know, the sand dollar didn't exist yet because my company's name is Sand Dollar. Mm. But what I'm saying to you is we were talking about the need to move from this so-called cryptocurrency, which is not real. This is why it was a mess. No one yet, and no one in their right mind would tell you cryptocurrency is the greater fool theory. However, there's something called stable coins and other things that will come out of this. These are what is called auxiliary. 1992, when the World Wide Web was developed, we had thousands of companies that came out of it. Today, maybe a handful still exist, because people will come with these weird ideas and people will be hungry to make some money, and the suckers, for lack of a better word, will all crowd on, and eventually the field will diminish and the real ones would exist. And we have an opportunity in the financial service and banking industry to move away from this concept of crypto being cryptocurrency and understand that digital assets means everything that is digitized. Mm-hmm. We have the ability to act as the custodian, using from a constitutional standpoint, the world is talking about privacy, protection, and sovereignty of data.
Before you go into that, just write it down for me. Just take a little quick pin right there. Let me take this commercial break. I got to pay some bills. Ladies and gentlemen, I thank you so much for being a part of this. 96.9 FM radio. We have these guys are really being able to hit on all levels right now. All cylinders are out there and really on point and having a conversation for national growth and development. I'm in the studio with Graham Rutherford, and zooming in all the way from Grand Bahama is C. Allen Johnson. Familiar names that you know, please be a part of the conversation. 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259, or hit me up on the text, 422-4796. It is sort of a panel conversation on Wednesday. Let's take this quick commercial break right here on the foundation and be right back after this.
The Foundation. We'll be back right after this.
The Foundation. The Foundation.
Tired of paying too many bills and loan payments each month?
Shrink your monthly debt payments down to one easy loan.
It also has a built-in savings that pays you 5% interest.
Inquire about our debt consolidation loans today.
Call 356-7764.
Guardian Radio and the Foundation are on the move.
Bahamas, this one's for you.
SBT. Small Business Thursdays. Every Thursday, the Foundation with Howard Grant will highlight small businesses throughout the country, far and wide. Your products, services, prices, and personality. We want to hear it all. Get your 30 or 60 second advertisement heard on air at a fraction of the cost. We here at the Foundation understand the times and don't want you to be left behind. With Guardian Radio, you reach your specific demographic and it is unmatched.
We reach thousands daily.
Get your products off the shelf and your services in their hearts. Small Business Thursdays with the Foundation, only on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. For more information, call 302-2300 or the Help Me Howard line at 827-0111. SBT. Small Business Thursdays. Get your business moving today.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Foundation. The Foundation. The Foundation. 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 The Foundation. The Foundation.
And we are back, ladies and gentlemen. This time has gone by just like that. It's been a great conversation. I think we touched on so many things that we have not kind of come to a complete halt just yet as it relates to talking about these things. This conversation could go on for weeks. I know it can. And I want you to participate in these last few minutes of the show. If you want to be a part of the conversation, please give me a call, 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259, or hit me up on the text, 422-4796, and we can be able to assist like that. Let me see if I can read one or two of these texts. See exactly where we are. It says, Howard, you talked about centralizing government services in one spot. That's a great idea. Would it not be also serve us better to space out different government ministries to different islands to promote growth and jobs there? Have the central offices in Nassau, but base certain things in other islands, example, agriculture, Andros, transport in Grand Bahama, etc. Right? That's a text that's coming through. It says, let me see if I can read another text. It says, hey, Howard, and guess, where does the money go when our government sells some of our islands and keys? There's some texts coming through. These are questions that they have. It says, great show as usual. I think he lies. Which Bahamian don't eat bacon? You all need to stop it.
Right? That's it right there. But do we have the fear?
You need to stop it, lad.
Do we have the fear of decentralizing, letting stuff go to the out islands and not having that grip by keeping it here in the capital? It's a shame you got to come to the capital to get your passport?
But Graham, this is decentralizing. Why do we want to centralize? If technology would eliminate 20,000 of the workers we have,
yes,
then it means technology would allow you to do things that you normally wouldn't do. Driver's license can be renewed online. Passports and other things can be renewed online. You could go to one portal and reach national insurance certification and all of, the so-called ease of doing business. So what happens is, as technology enhances our way of life, what we need now to do is move to the knowledge economy, where behemoths begin to manage these economies, because we are small enough. Because believe it or not, I know we are afraid to have this conversation concerning immigration and the need for growth of our population. We have Singapore and these other places, again, we like to refer to 2 million citizens, 4 million visitors. They're not afraid of losing their citizenship because they have protection mechanisms in place and they have high anchored rules for citizenship. We have the will of cabinet policy that changes every single day. And so if we have a conversation on immigration reform in context, and we have the conversation on digitization or technological enhancement of our economy, we could have these rather than people saying, I feel we should put some boats down to the south when technology buoys and satellite imaging now.
Now, I won't touch this technology. I won't touch this technology concept because I always draw comparison. And the thing is as a millennial, like y'all labeled me today, as a millennial, I have had
senior,
the opportunity.
Senior
millennial. Yeah. So put some respect on the
full,
date.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
I've had the opportunity to be able to see transition and transformation in the United States of America, more specifically, being able to go there. I had an opportunity to be able to move in other spaces and identify how things are going on there. I remember one time ago when we would drive up either on I-75 or I-95 and we're heading going to Disney World or wherever with my parents, we would stop at toll booths. And as I started to go with my parent, with my children and my wife and whatnot, driving up on those particular roads, going to King's Dominion or wherever we're going, we're looking around and we don't see the toll booths anymore. They have sun passes, they have digitization and whatnot, and everything is linked. When I try to go back to thrift to be able to get my rent a car, they got a picture of me there running the booth and I ain't pay or I ain't this and I don't have these particular things, right? Let's be very clear. You can't rent your car because of this. My point to you is that everything can be actually amalgamated and come together in this small island. The fact of the matter is that we know this island has been the proverbial beta test for a very long time because of our demographics, because of our position, because of the relentless consumption that happens in this. We've been used and identified as a beta test for a lot of businesses in the United States of America. Now, let's be clear about this. If we can be used in that particular capacity, why aren't we using technology to identify how we can execute and find going back? Why are we going back and back and back to the proverbial thousand spoons, not empowering? And, you know, I got a text earlier. I want to read this text.
There's a reason. There's a real valid reason why we're not doing it. I'm not going to say it.
But let me say it. This is what happens.
Let me read the text before you go. It says, Howard, you are having a good conversation about moving forward. Why are you bringing up a transgender thing? You're starting to sound foolish, stirring up hate. Focus, dude. That's what they're saying to me. Wow. But my only contrast, but bringing up Uganda, and I'm not afraid to read these texts. Y'all know that. Y'all should know that about me by now. I can tell you the truth. I'm not afraid to have a conversation about Uganda's position. When I had the show the other day and talked about the myriad of issues that are happening around Uganda, and they take on this Christianity that has been given to them in the 1800s and stand in such strong conviction and say, hell no, we won't do that. That conviction in that particular position, they weren't deterred left, right, or straight. My point and position as it relates to this transgender education and information is just what I'm saying here. The schools need more information to take you from the position of digging and being a part of the regime of a thousand spoons to dig one hole. They need you to be empowered to understand how to be able to run a backhoe, but you're still in this position and having conversation about transgender education. You're confusing me. I don't understand this.
But Howard, let me answer that for you. Let me help you with that.
Distraction.
Right? And we come back to about what you say, why they don't use technology. I want people to pause for a moment, go to their Google. I want them to, it's a term, even though people have heard me said, and I know due to the conservatism in our country, right? You've heard me say the data economy, green economy, blue economy, silver economy, knowledge economy, digital economy, conceptual economy, ocean economy, orange economy, shared economy, not a carbon economy. There's one economy that I leave out because I know it means war. Google the pink economy.
P-A-I-N-T?
P-I-N-K.
Or P-I-N-K.
The pink economy is a $3 trillion economy. The power of the pink economy, which is what we want to call the LGBTXIA, whatever definition you want to give it, is a $3 trillion economy that is dominated tech.
This is wild what you're doing
that
here.
That's dominated tourism and whatever else. The problem is when we talk about diversification of our economy away from tourism, I hear people say this all the time. If tourism is the ninth largest industry in the world, what are you going to diversify into? Number eight, number seven, number six? You're not. We have yet to touch even. We are walking around. We took a sign from the beach called Tourism and Hospitality, talking about we reach. Listen to me. The beach is there, and tourism and hospitality, we have yet to integrate into it. Tourism in the Bahamas alone could be a $15 billion economy in 25 years as part of our GDP alone, hospitality and tourism.
See, Alan, let me back you up. How come if tourism is failing and we're diversifying from it, Qatar is moving towards it?
Yeah.
Right. What I'm saying to you is that the pink economy, I want people and your economists and whatever to go look at the impact of the pink economy. And as we begin to have this conversation,
well, we can need the red economy.
LBT and all
that
of
is the blood of Christ. Things. Amen. Praise
right,
God.
Right. But I'm saying to you, what happens is you can indulge, you know what you say? I don't eat pork, right? But I have no problem in owning a food store that may sell pork, but you will still not get me to eat it. So my point is that, are we afraid to have a conversation about this? We can have it in context of our beliefs, but not one of an argumentative type environment. So you said, how do you say are your children going to be part of a global economy?
Yeah.
But you're telling them, ignore this one part of the economy that affects every aspect of the other economies.
Now,
how do you manage what you can measure, but how do you measure what you refuse to acknowledge?
Now, my only point with this particular economy is that in contrast to when I grew up in the 80s and going to high school in the 90s and being able to identify these things, never did we have conversations that empowered us and really prepared us. I come from the back of the bush in 8 Mile Rock at 8 Mile Rock High School. We weren't having these conversations that prepared us for life. I had to go and seek this knowledge. I literally had to jump on a plane and go off to other countries, go off to other spaces and absorb the environment and do my search and research there. We didn't have this bunch of Google and all these things. I had to understand for myself exactly what the world offers. My children now, on the other hand, have access to Google on their hands. They're asking me questions that have nothing to do with school. Nothing to do with school. Mm-hmm. Nothing to do with school, right? And they're talking about morality issues. They're talking about so much things. And so my only point to you, when giving the contrast the other day and talking about the fact that I had to ask my younger brothers and sisters what would LOL. Right? Someone laughed the other day and they says they thought it meant lots of love, right? I had to ask my kids, what were these things, or my brothers and sisters, what were these things when I was growing up? And my point to you is that because of their access to this kind of these devices and the technology that exist in this space, maybe we aren't doing our part in instilling the intangibles, the morality that they need to be able to carry, the faith that they need to be able to carry to these different spaces, because it's inevitable. We are going to go there. We as a people, the 400,000 some of us, many of us are going to make those strategic steps and become the quote-unquote intelligent 5% staying in the United States of America, Canada, and other spaces. That is inevitable in this country. But what's not inevitable is that you carry this conviction, and it don't have to be this Christian faith. I ain't going to fight you. If that's not your belief, that's not what Howard is here to do. I am here to stand for what my convictions are. And my convictions say we have to now get back to being able to institute hope and community in the Bahamas. How do we do that? Is it through inclusion? Is it through these particular avenues? And that's what I want to know.
No, what I'm saying to you is that you could respect another person's belief as long as they do not try to impose on you. This is the argument I've been having with our LGBT community for a long time, is that we can talk about what is needed for your perception of inclusion. Now, we can have a real debate, not emotion, because a lot of the people within our behemoth LGBT community has no information and data. They go by simply by global trend and information to become talking heads who would have said and they repeat, not in the context of exactly who we are. And so, you know, so what we can do, though, and I look forward to this for the last 10 years, when Erin Green headed the Rainbow Coalition or whatever it was called at that time, she brought a certain level of intelligence to that discussion that I think that behemoths weren't ready for. And if you listen to her now, even on her talk show daily, she is intellectually way ahead of our leadership and most behemoths. I'm not downgrading us. I'm simply saying this. You could be at 100% and some, you could say you could have 100%, you could have an IQ of 100 and she may have 120, which is 20 above normal. It doesn't mean you're not normal. So I'm simply saying that, but this new medium of the LGBT, except for a few of them, I've talked to, I think, is Alexis DeMarco, wonderful mind. Erin Green, wonderful mind. Community is more about pushing what they've been indoctrinated to believe is real on other people, where we should be living in cooperation with each other. The whole concept is that we used the word a Christian nation, except the Constitution didn't call us a Christian nation. It said, we will abide by Christian principles and the rule of law, yeah. Meaning, let's abide Christian by the law. Yeah. But the Christian principles is very thing. The reason why the Christian principle was chosen is because it's only an under Christian principle compared with every other religion that respect to allow you to have other religions and other belief systems. Is
from the Christian principle concept comes from the Anglican Church being the head of state in this particular instance and being able to talk about those things. So there could be no expectation that they would go outside of those ramifications, but they're open enough with this concept and idea of democracy being able to come in there and say, hey, listen, we can deal by these principles, but you know, you can make your choices and move in those particular directions. I don't really want to make the show about that, but I'm only saying that comparison.
But in national development, the argument always is we are Christian nations. Those people is not going by what it actually says. They're going by, again, by what they believe, feel, or was told.
But that's the same thing that when we were young children, people tell you, right. God say shit.
And I say then, why not let's have a conversation in context of what the Constitution actually says. Yeah. If we want to change it to a Christian nation, let's change the Constitution. But the Constitution itself does not define us as a Christian nation, as people say do.
I'm committed to having a constitutional conversation.
When we have a conversation on national development, it has to be in the context of exactly where we are and where we want to be, yeah. Not where we wish we were.
Yeah.
And Article 71, the power is vested in Her Majesty. What does vested mean? Mm-hmm. Bestow land, but you got internal self-governance.
Mm-hmm. We talked about that.
But see, the independence order, and this is why I hear people talk about constitutional reform. It has to be, again, taken in context of this concept called the independence order that was given to us. The fact is that we have never moved from the starting line and had a conversation, and this should be part of national development. How do you have a conversation from national development using an archaic system? Now, mind you, the system that we adopted, this parliamentary democracy, the Westminster system, was based on a system of honor, which brings me back to the system of said why you don't want technology. It expected honorable men and women to become there. This is why they didn't need a constitution. So when you come and ask about, well, why don't we use technology, to the very thing for the bastardization that we have of this system, because everything I hear people say, we need to go to republic and everything to do, so far, the Westminster system doesn't prohibit it, but it requires honorable men. But in the lack of honorable men, you put systems in place. And you say, what about the technology? Technology mandates transparency.
Yes.
Technology mandates anti-corruption.
Yes.
Technology mandates accountability and integrity. Yes. So when you see leadership resist technology,
yes.
They're resisting accountability, they're resisting transparency, they're resisting being in thing. And you know, imagine this. A leader that says to you, you must bring me a law for me to be accountable. You must bring me a law for me to be transparent. You must bring a law for me to be non-corrupted. How do you elect a leader that says only a law will stop me from doing these things? This is the problem. And so when you
hear that's the underlying indecency right there. That's where it is.
So they're telling you, and only in the same capacity they did it for sharks, for dogs, and for turtles, to pass a law on transparency, accountability, integrity, and these things, anti-corruption, is a simple process. These laws will not allow me to be who I am. And this brings it to the point. Power does not corrupt, nor does absolute power corrupt absolutely. However, power reveals the person they pretend not to be. That's what the problem with power is. So these people are revealing to you who they are once you give them power.
Sound like somebody I know.
It enhances what they were.
So technology, if we want to. So you say, oh, we have the Freedom of Information Commissioner. Joke. You can tell him respond to me like he did for the minister for the official opposition. He has no job. Because how do you be the commissioner of information when there's no information? I can tell you in Grand Bahama where decades of information was destroyed in Dorian and all across this country where we have files inside of the libraries and the people's words keep the record that is mold and mildew and being destroyed.
They haven't digitized it.
You have Mr. Aaron Kinky Nose who began digitization since the early 2000s that we have refused to pay him because he has these records and other different things that we have digitized the birth records, the digital. So what I'm simply saying is that we're giving lip service to the 21st century while hugging, like holding to a tree, hugging the tree of the 20th century. And the world doesn't care if the Bahamas ever moves a notch on the development scale because the world will go on without us. It is up to us now to lace in our cleats and use that kicking off thing to run, catch, and accelerate past the world because we are a speedboat compared to a cruise ship. And I say to you, we have the fuel, which is the Bahamian people, that can drive us well into the 21st century and 22nd century.
Let me let Graham take it from here. Graham, give me a last wrap-up.
Just some thoughts.
This sort of, go ahead.
You know, as I've said always, we need to set up a think tank of persons. If you were to make me leader, I would invite everybody in the room to come with the ideas on how to fix banking, tourism, you name it, energy security. And until we set up a think tank of the brightest minds, not the people that are the accountants, economists, and the financial fellas that have us $10 billion in debt that do not know how to get us out of debt, one, which there are countries in the world that don't have that, and how not to tax our citizens. And it's only going to happen or start to happen if you get energy security. So we need a think tank to show how to give ownership to our people instead of just a job. Because that's why you're seeing this undertone of anger in you young people. Go to Canada. Get out of here because you'll never own this.
Well,
so that's what we have to do.
This has been a powerful show, ladies and gentlemen. I'm thanking you. Thank you so very kindly for being able to be a part of it. There's a text that came and says, just because there's a certain color economy doesn't mean that we have to go after it. We need to focus on the economies that are consistent with our values, culture, vision, and goals. These are texts coming through. I thank you so much for being able to...
What about the church economy? Why don't we go after that? Let's go after the church economy. Global church economy.
Global church economy.
What color is that, C. Allen? I gotta go.
Probably white like the caller. Guys, listen, this has been a very good show, man. I want to thank you all so very kindly. We're gonna have more shows like this that actually be able to put ourselves in the position and really look ourselves in the face, look at our reflection as we continue to be able to move forward. I thank you so very kindly. Tomorrow is Small Business Thursdays. If you want to be a part of that, it's not too late. We got some great folks that's going to be coming in tomorrow. Give me a call, 827-0111, 827-0111. C. Allen, all the way from Grand Bahama, thank you for being able to give us a call.
Thank you, Allen Johnson.
Thank you, my brother. I do appreciate you for being able to be on the show here at the Foundation. And I thank Graham Weatherford. Thank you so very kindly for being able to be here. Guys, beautiful day, ladies and gentlemen. Get yourselves ready for the weekend. Go down there to Willie's Kong Salad. I know you just get your Kong Salad early. Wherever you go, make sure you do that. Have a beautiful day. We'll see you tomorrow. Please stick and stay for Chivago Lang with Z Live right after this.